right on the stems of his hips. Her touch was just exactly perfect, and she looked up into his eyes and said, "Danny North, I don't know how you did it, and I haven't dared say this to Daddy. He's just calling it a miracle, but I know you healed me. I don't know how or why, but I felt it that day you visited. I felt it wash over me, and I felt stronger. Every hour, every day since then, stronger. I know you did it. I made Daddy take me to the doctor right away, and he said it was all gone. The cancer. I was clean of it. He'd never seen anything like it. He actually asked me if I'd been to a faith healer."
"Had you?" asked Danny.
"No. My healer came to me," she said. "I don't expect any explanations. I don't want to know how you did it. I just know it was you, and thank you."
Then she tiptoed to kiss him on the mouth. Full on the mouth. It hadn't even been 12 hours since he kissed Pat, and here he was getting kissed again. Only this girl didn't even know he was a mage. Though she did know, somehow, that he had power, so it amounted to the same thing. Apparently, you show a girl you can do real magic, and she's got her mouth on yours as soon as possible.
"Are you complaining, you idiot? Is this bad? Do you hate it?"
"Not really," he had to admit to himself. And she was still kissing him. And now her arms were around his waist instead of on it, and she was pressed against him, and the car horn tooted outside. A house this small and so close to the street, it sounded like the car was right in the living room.
"Thank you,"
she said again. Whether for the kiss or the healing, Danny wasn't sure. For the kiss, he wanted to answer like a store clerk, "Thank you." Instead, he just followed her out to the car. Shy? She showed not a speck of embarrassment when she got out of the front seat and climbed into the back beside him.
"It's not right to make him sit alone in the back," she explained to her father.
"It's fine to leave me alone in the front," he asked, but he was joking. "Have I got me the coach's daughter for a girlfriend? I'm trapped in a young adult novel. A girl's novel, so it's all about the love story instead of the death squads coming to get me. I already had a triangle with Xena and Pat. What does Nikki make it? A square? No, this is solid geometry now, a tetrahedron. But at school, the strangest thing happened. Nikki made no effort to follow him in. She just waved at him, and it was Leader who explained, 'I got to get her all signed in.' And when Nikki showed up in his first period class partway through, was that arranged on purpose, to have some of the same schedule as him, she gave no sign that she recognized him. One of the guys near Danny whispered, 'Hubba, hubba.' And for the first time, Danny realized that Nikki, now that she wasn't sick-looking, was quite attractive. Not that he had thought she was ugly, but he hadn't realized that she was attractive in general, and not just a nice-seeming person to him in particular. Her shape was high school girl slender, but with unmissable breasts, though she wasn't Laurette, there was no cleavage showing. How did I not notice this before? Even when she was kissing me and those breasts were pressed up against me, how did I not notice how they give her a pretty nearly perfect shape? Nikki turned toward the Hubba Hubba guy and gave him the shy smile. What a tease. She can turn it on and off whenever she wants. The come hither, I'm so shy smile that she must have practiced in front of the mirror. Has she been playing me? She spent the whole rest of the period not playing him. Unless ignoring him was the game. She certainly had him thinking about her most of the period. She had spent the morning on the porch in her nightgown and lacy robe watching him sweat. She had come into the bathroom while he was naked in the shower and taken away his clothes. She had come into his house and washed his dishes and then kissed him long and with her body pressed to his, and now, in this class, she didn't notice he existed. Two can play at this game, he thought. But a moment later he realized, no, they can't. Girls can play it on guys, but guys can't play it on girls. At least I can't play it, because I keep glancing at her, and she never looks at me. It's like I had gone through a gate and was now watching invisibly through a porthole in space-time, and why would I do that? Because I can't take my eyes off her. She's playing me, and it works. I'm just a fish dancing on the line. He made it a point to eat lunch with his friends, but that was worse, because while everybody else was normal, Xena flirting with him had to be regarded as the new normal, Pat was also playing the I don't see you, you don't exist game. The difference was that he and Pat were friends, and the kiss last night had been his idea probably more than hers. Or had it? Girls were all man-mages when you thought about it. They wrapped guys around their fingers and dragged them any way they wanted. First time I've ever envied the gay, thought Danny. But then he had to admit to himself, being honest, that he felt nothing of the kind. This was all kind of exciting. Complicated, yes. A little dangerous. But what had he come to high school for, if not for the fact that this was where they kept the high school girls? Just before P.E. in the afternoon, a freshman doing office time for some freshman sin brought him a note from the principal. Come see me right now, it said. What did you do without asking us along? Asked Wheeler. Nothing, said Danny. I'm on leader's team. Why is he bothering me? Want company? Asked Hal. Looking for an excuse to ditch P.E.? Asked Danny. Always. Don't worry. Leader's in a better mood. His daughter's all better, and she's even back in school. I didn't know he had a daughter, said Hal. Or that she was sick, said Wheeler. Somebody mated with Leader? Asked Hal. He has a job, said Danny. There's always some woman who wants a man with a job. Really? Asked Wheeler. That's the first time anybody ever gave me a reason why I should graduate from high school. So I can get the kind of job that will make a woman want to mate with me. Nah, said Hal. No way. You're going to have to swim upstream and spawn. With that, Danny left them and jogged to the office. Mama and Baba were sitting on chairs across from the principal's desk. Baba at once rose to his feet. Danny, he said, we're your Uncle Alf and Auntie Gerd. I know you haven't seen us in a long time, but when we heard you were living here with your Aunt Vivi gone half the time, well, we had to look in on you. We had no idea his guardian was absentee. She's not, said Danny. We see each other nearly every day. It's these people that I don't know. Did you ask them for ID? Baba chuckled. We just want a chance to talk to you, Danny. We didn't know how else to do it, said Mama. You don't answer your phone. I don't have a phone, said Danny. You see our problem, said Baba. But Principal Massey kindly offered us the use of his office for our conversation. No, said Danny, walking back out of the office. Come back here, young man, demanded Massey. Mama followed him. Please, she whispered. Please, I beg you, if you have any feeling for me at all. I spent most of my life with feeling for you, whispered Danny. It almost led to Hammernip Hill. Should I tell the principal to ask the sheriff to do some excavating there? Please, she said. Principal Massey had followed them out into the corridor by then. Danny North, that was the rudest thing I've seen you do, and that takes some doing. I don't remember a single act of kindness from these people, said Danny. I'm settled in here now, and I don't know what they want from me. Don't you have rules about letting strangers have access to the children in this school? But Principal Massey reached his hands out helplessly, one toward Danny, one toward his parents. It didn't occur to me that they might be strangers. I still don't believe they are. They look so much like you. Danny had no answer to that. It had never crossed his mind that he could not deny being his father's son, let alone his nephew. He looked just like Baba, except for the fact that he also had a strong resemblance to Mama. Both resemblances in the same face at the same time. If Principal Massey had half a brain in his head, he'd wonder why anybody looked so much like both his aunt and his uncle, one of whom presumably was not his blood relative. We'll talk out in the parking lot, said Danny. We'll talk where I can walk away if I feel like it, and where nobody can listen through a door, and nobody can sneak up unobserved. Well, that's all right then, said Massey. In fact, we'll talk out on the street, which isn't school property. Then you won't get in trouble, Principal Massey. Very thoughtful of you. They left him behind and walked in virtual silence until they were beyond the parking lot and across the street. Virtual silence, because Mama kept trying to talk and Danny gave her a sharp shh and walked faster. Finally, they were so out of breath from keeping up with a young man who was, after all, a sprinter, that they couldn't have spoken if they tried. I told you the terms, said Danny. I told you that I'd come for your answer. I told you not to come for me. As far as I'm concerned, there's no great gate for you. You'd have been too dangerous anyway, the two of you. We aren't the ones the family chose, said Baba. I'm barely Odin anymore. Who else would they choose to lead? Gish? Zog? Maybe. Or it might have been Mook, said Baba. Some felt they couldn't trust me to make an unbiased decision because I was your father. When they realized how we plotted to keep you, knowing you were a gate mage, we're lucky we aren't in Hammernip for putting the family at such risk. They don't want to reward us by letting us be the two who go to Westil. Danny wanted to say boo-hoo, but Baba and Mama had taken a risk, knowing about him but not killing him. They lost prestige and power. They might have lost their lives. Why are you here, then? Asked Danny. To ask for a private passage through the Great Gate? Here's news for you. It hasn't been built yet, and I meant what I said. No special favors for anyone. No extras. It's not about the Great Gate, said Baba impatiently. It's about us, as your parents. What did you expect us to do? We hoped you'd be a gate mage, all right? We didn't hope for just any baby. We hoped for you. A tricky, mouthy, linguistically brilliant brat with no loyalty to anyone, because that's what gate mages are. We hoped you'd open a passage to Westil, yes. Of course we did. Before we knew you, we expected to be able to use you. And you still do, said Danny. Because we're not insane, said Baba. You exist. Everybody wants to pass through a great gate. What do you expect, that we alone of all the Westilians in Middlegard would care only about our beloved boy with not a thought about the gates that we created you to make? I don't expect anything from you, said Danny, which is a good thing because anything was what I never got. Danny, we gave you all we could, said Mama. She came closer, and I don't just mean life itself. We had Mook and Lummy look after you, feed you when you stayed late. Listen to your questions and answer them. Watch out for you to give you warning if you did something dangerous. We made sure that Thor was in charge of the Watchers so that if you needed to get away, you wouldn't be caught. If we stayed close to you, said Baba, then the family would never trust us to be impartial when it came time for decisions about you. We could either have the power to protect you, or we could be your loving, affectionate parents. Not both. Danny knew that this was true. He had always known it. Mama interpreted his silence as a kind of victory, and she pressed the advantage. She placed her hand on his upper arm, not gripping it exactly, just holding him. But he had been touched by enough women in the past 24 hours. He was done with being betrayed by his natural reaction to physical touch. A bit of physical affection from his long-absent mother? It sent a thrill of relief through him. He wasn't having any of it. He shrugged away and backed up a step. "Touch me again, and you're out of here," Danny said. Mama gave something like a sob and stepped away, holding the hand that had held him in her other hand, as if she had been devastatingly wounded, as if the hand were pumping out blood and the injury could not be healed. "We were proud of you," said Baba, not even glancing at his wife's reaction. "You were so clever. You understood your danger. Not gate mage danger, but Drekka danger. You kept your head down. You kept trying to find ways to survive. We saw it and admired you and respected you. I don't know if I would have had the self-control to handle myself as you did. The trickster boy you were as a child disappeared completely, swallowed up in the careful, careful young man who finally found his power and used it to run away and save his life. How nice of you to admire me from such a distance, said Danny. But his father's words of praise filled him with light and brought tears to his eyes. We human beings are such machines, thought Danny. All the emotions are available at the flip of a switch, predictable as robots. Danny, said Mama, I get it that you hate us. I do understand it, but Danny didn't hate them. He was angry with them, had been hurt by them, but no, he didn't hate them. After everything, all he really wanted was his mother's affection and his father's approval. Now they were offering exactly what he wanted. Only these things had been so long withheld that Danny refused to trust the fulfillment of his longing. "Whatever you want from me," said Danny, "I don't have it, or if I do, it's not for you, not anymore." "That's what I was afraid of," said Mama.
"I told her not to expect anything better than this," said Baba. For a moment, hearing such finality in Baba's voice, Danny believed that this whole meeting had been a trap, that having failed to win him over, they would now unleash whatever assassination they had planned for him. So he gated 15 feet away. Mother burst into tears. "We aren't going to betray you," said Baba coldly. "How could we, even if we wanted to?"
"Let's go, Alf," said Mama.
"Yes," said Baba. He led her away toward the family pickup, which looked even more beaten up now, having spent a short time buried in a crevice in the earth. Watching them walk toward the truck, Danny saw them for the first time. Not as the crafty leaders of a group of ruthless mages, but as a middle-aged man and woman, weary of everything, having been repudiated by the ungrateful son who blamed them for having done only what was possible for him and nothing more. Danny passed a gate over them. He did it smoothly, carefully. They did not miss a stride. If they felt anything, he would have been surprised. But their steps looked younger, not so tired as they continued to the truck and got inside. He did not wish to punish them. He had thought he did, but now he felt no such desire. He just wanted to stop wanting them to love him, because now they were saying that they did, and he was hungry to believe them. But they had so many motives to lie that he could not trust a word they said or a thing they did.
Chapter 12. Middleguard. Wad and Anonoe were back and forth about what to do with the boys. Eliuic and Anop were young and powerless, but they were the most valuable prize. Without these two sons of King Priard, potential heirs, Anonoe herself had no leverage in the kingdom. Her personal powers were unsuspected, a necessity for a man-mage who wished to stay alive. Only the boys mattered. Anonoe wanted them kept safe at all costs. So, for that matter, did Wad. But what constituted their safety was where they disagreed. "You say it's not even your own gate, not under your control," said Anonoe.
"It's not under anyone's control at the moment," said Wad. "But it exists. It works. There is no danger from the gate. Do you think I'd deceive you about such a thing when I mean to make the passage with you?"
"When they're needed, we'll need them here," said Anonoe. "Who is King Priard in Middleguard? What protection will being his sons offer them there?"
"More to the point," said Wad, "their father's nothingness in Middleguard will be their protection. No one in Middleguard has any reason to want them dead or any motive to capture them. They'll have the safety of being nobody. While here, everything depends on your being able to trust whomever you leave them with. Who is that person?"
Anonoe named several, but Wad had spent too long as the castle monkey, seeing what everyone did in their private moments. He told sadly true tales about every man and woman that she mentioned. She was soon near tears. "I never had friends," she said.
"No one has friends," said Wad. "I was as true a friend to Bexoy as anyone has ever had. But I kept you alive when she wanted you dead."
"For reasons of your own," said Anonoe.
"I made no claim of generosity," said Wad. "I make none now. But I want your sons alive, and I will trust strangers on Middleguard more than anyone known to you in Iceway or anywhere on Westall."
"Then I'll stay here myself, watch over them, and wait for you," said Anonoe. Wad rehearsed the facts to her yet again. How their magical arrival in this high mountain village could not have gone unnoticed. The story would spread, had already spread, would soon float down the Greyborn until it came to the capital city, Caimsham, and then to the castle, Nasasa. There would be no lack of wits in either place, and soon they would put together the woman and two boys who appeared in the high mountains at just the time when a woman and two boys vanished from caves in the cliff face below the castle while soldiers of Priard attempted to kill them.
"I'm not leaving you here to die," said Wad. I'll need to move these people who took you in as well, or they'll surely be tortured to find out information that they do not have.
By here, I didn't mean I would stay in this very village. I meant here on Westall, here where we don't have to pass through any gates.
Stop wasting my time with fears as ridiculous as this. If you were really afraid, you'd try to use your man magic on me to get me to comply with your will. But you don't, so clearly you don't mean it.
Would my man magic work on you?
Until I realized what was happening and gated away, of course it would. I appreciate your showing me the respect of not trying. Likewise, if I wanted to, I could gate you and your boys against your will to the mouth of the Great Gate and push you through, and you couldn't do a thing about it. Instead, I'm talking to you because I've treated you as pawns and captives long enough.
I've heard what happens to gates, said Anonoe.
What have you heard? How could you hear anything? There hasn't been a gate on Westall except of my making for more than 14 centuries.
There have been gates, said Anonoe. Everyone knows the stories. A gate mage learns to go from here to there, and then suddenly the gate thief comes and takes them all away. What if that happens while we're...
Haven't you understood anything, woman? Demanded Wad. I'm the gate thief. Me. That's why I could keep you locked up behind my gates for more than a year, and no one took the gates from me.
If you're the gate thief, and yes, I understood you, but why should I pay attention to such ridiculous brag? Then you must have been alive for more than 1,000 years. You, a mere boy.
Why would anyone bother to become immortal in an old body? Asked Wad. But I'm not immortal. I was in a tree. More precisely, a tree mage persuaded a tree to let me gate into the living tree flesh between the bark and the dry wood. There, I made the tiniest of gates, which moved me slowly upward through the tree, rising with me, rising far more slowly than a fingernail grows. Passing through a gate heals you. I healed myself, I healed the tree, minute by minute, day by day, year by year. The tree lived, and I lived, never aging, never ill. And I watched. Every gate that was made, I sensed. At first, my powers were magnificently strong, as yours will be if you ever make up your mind to go through a great gate. But that boost in power fades with time. I had to watch ever more closely, concentrate ever more tightly. My outselves roamed the world, alert, watching. After the first 500 years, I sensed nothing from Middlegard. After the second 1,000, gates on Westall were like a distant whisper, except for the making of a great gate. That was like a shout, as the gates entwined and roped and rose into the sky. Then I reached out and swallowed them. That's your gate, thief. The husk of an ancient man kept alive within a tree, seeing nothing, hearing nothing, only an endless watchfulness for the making of a great gate, with only the captured gates of long-dead mages to keep me company.
So you're not as young as you seem, said Anonoe. And then she smiled, so he would know that she understood the bathos of her own remark.
I came out like an adolescent orphan, hardly remembering anything of my life before, not even understanding that I was the gate thief, and for a time not knowing what a gate was. I ate gates by reflex then. I made them the same way. A kind woman took me in, and I made a mother of her. Until someone murdered her for refusing to cooperate with an attempt to poison the queen.
You're talking about Hull? Asked Anonoe.
Please don't tell me that you knew beforehand about the killing of that good woman, said Wad. Unless it's true. If you lie to me, we can't be friends.
So many rules you have, said Anonoe. I lie to you all the time, and you lie to me. We're human, and we lie, because that is the only way people can possibly get along with each other.
You're wrong, said Wad. We can tell each other the truth, as far as we know it. We might be wrong about what we believe is true, but we can speak our best understanding to each other. Hul did that with me, and I with her.
She knew you were the gate thief? Asked Anonoe.
And when Watt didn't answer, she smiled.
I see. You told her the truth, except when the truth might make her like you less.
So what is it that you aren't telling me?
That I think you're right. The boys will be safer on Middleguard. And if I can't take the risk of trusting you to get me through a great gate and back again, I might as well give up. If you're not trustworthy, then I've got nothing. But if I refuse to trust you, then I've got nothing. So I might as well trust you and hope that you amount to something.
A fair gamble.
I trusted a king once, said Anonoe.
He never let you down.
But he did, said Anonoe. He may not have meant to, but he failed to find me and set me free.
My powers were too much for him, said Wad. What could he do against a gate mage?
Queen Bexoy did something, said Anonoe.
She murdered a baby when I was distracted. That was the limit of her power.
He said it calmly, as if the mention of Trick had not caused emotion to rage upward from his belly, to fill his heart with grief and his mind with rage.
And she knew what I was. If Priard had known, he would have suspected me, and if he had suspected me in your disappearance, he would have had me tortured to find out where you were.
You, tortured.
He would have tried.
Did he even ask you?
I told him that I had looked at every inch of the castle and you weren't there. Nor had I seen anyone carrying you out. All true, you'll note.
And also lies, said Anonoe. I'm such a fool to believe in you.
I'm all you've got, and you're all I've got.
All you've got to use against Queen Bexoy, said Anonoe. Why not just pass her through a gate to the bottom of the sea?
She has to lose and know that she has lost, said Wad. She has to see you in her place, and your son's in the place of her son.
Anonoe laughed and nodded.
Now I can trust you. Now I know your heart.
But she did not know him.
Not his heart, not his mind. Yes, he meant to wreak his vengeance on the queen, and so he spoke that way because Anonoe would understand that motive and believe him.
But his real reason was that until he had put Anonoe back in her right place, beside the king, with her sons as his heirs, the guilt of his own crimes would be unbearably heavy. More than he could bear. I spent 15 centuries trying to save the world, and I would sacrifice it all for mere vengeance? Bexoy would never be brought to justice. She played the same game as all the royal people of the world. Should she be called a monster because she was better at it?
No. Wad's chief purpose was still and always would be to keep Bell from walking upon the face of Westall, taking its reins into his hand. If he could redeem himself for his crimes against Anonoe and her children without discommoding that main purpose, that would be well and good. But for vengeance and retribution, he would not cross the street. Hearing such a thought in his own mind, he laughed bitterly. Self-deception always works. It has such a willing audience.
What are you laughing at? Asked Anonoe.
Myself, he said truthfully.
When they explained the purpose of their upcoming journey to the boys, the younger one, Anop, seemed to understand. Eliuk, as usual, looked at the face from which the talking noises came, but there was no sign that the language registered in his mind at all. Then he talked to Rupe and Levitt.
I did you no kindness bringing this woman and her children here, said Wad. I realize that now. The soldiers will be here soon, and if they don't kill you outright, they'll have you brought to the castle of Nasasa and torture you to tell them things you do not even know.
Levitt understood, and her face flashed with anger, though she said nothing. Rupe showed no anger. He merely bowed his head in resignation.
What must I do? He asked.
There is a wind mage from Middleguard named Sed. He's being trained by a tree mage at the southern end of Mithercame. The tree mage refuses to have a name, since trees have no language. I asked the tree mage if he would object to having the meadows near him cultivated, and he did not mind at all. Fell no trees, and he will be your friend. Until you have a harvest, he will teach you how to let the trees provide for you.
So we leave everything, said Levitt.
Again, said Roop.
You've moved before. This time it will be a warmer place with richer soil and a growing season long enough that it isn't over before the seeds have pushed up stems and sunk roots fully into the earth.
What service will we owe the man? Asked Levitt.
None, said Wad. Not even the hand of your lovely daughter as his bride.
They looked alarmed.
I say he won't require it, Wad reassured them.
Are there people in the world who would demand such things? Asked Roop.
Kings require it of each other all the time. It's how Queen Bexoy came to Iceway. She was forced on Priard against his will.
Roop reached out his hand to hold Echo.
You say we must do this.
Or leave your children orphans. Or watch them tortured before your eyes, if they believe you really know where I and this woman and her two sons have gone.
You're a terrible friend to have, said Echo.
I am, agreed Wad. But then, I could have left you to your fate, not caring.
You'd never do that, said Echo. That is not the man you are.
You don't know the man I am, thought Wad.
As if she heard him or guessed from his face, Echo said, I know you better than you think. Because you saw him crawling from a tree?
Her little brother Baki teased.
Because he did bring them here, said Echo. He remembered us.
I wish he hadn't, said Levitt.
He remembered we were kind to him, said Echo, and so when he needed kindness for someone else, he came to us.
Yes, said Wad.
Echo faced him boldly. If you said that I would need to marry someone to save my family, said Echo, I would do it.
But I won't say that to you, said Wad.
You'll keep us safe, said Echo. From everyone?
I'll take you to a place that I believe will be as safe as anywhere on Westall. More than that, I can't promise. I won't be there to watch. It's the best I can do.
In the end, had they a choice? They gathered their few possessions, and Wad made a public gate for them, and they stepped through it, one by one. Anonoe watched them do it, she and her sons. Wad turned to her when the last of Roop's and Levitt's family had gone.
Now you know what it looks like, he said.
Going through a gate, Anonoe asked. I have fallen through the gate of my prison 100 times.
What trust looks like, said Wad.
They're not mages, said Anonoe. What choices do they have?
I don't know what powers those children might have, and for all I know, the father has some power with vegetables, or the mother away with snakes. They have choices, as many as you have.
Anonoe laughed. I have as few as they, you're right, she said. Perhaps they seemed weak to me because they love each other.
It was such a shocking thing to say that Wad had no answer for her.
I lived too long at court, said Anonoe. I have seen people owned, desired, and coveted, and I have seen people used. But few were loved, and few were loving.
You love your sons, said Wad.
I barely know my poor broken children, said Anonoe, resting one hand on Anop's head, the other on Eliuic's shoulder. Aren't you going to follow those farm folk and introduce them and the tree mage to each other?
He'll know who they are because they came through the gate, and they'll know him because the gate has led them straight to him.
What if they come back through the gate? Asked Anonoe.
The gate is gone. I took it back. I husband my gates carefully these days, said Wad. A few are all I have. You see, the gate thief got the rest.
She looked at him sharply.
You said that you...
I was the gate thief for 1,000 years or so, said Wad. I burgled one heart hoard too many. I am punished now, and the punishment is just.
Wad turned to Eliuic, who was not looking at him.
Whatever you are or might become, said Wad, passing through a great gate will strengthen you.
But the older boy gave no sign of hearing.
He's still singing to himself, said Anop.
Wad and Annonoe waited for the younger boy to explain.
Alone in the cave, with all the falling, said Anop, we sang to ourselves.
Wad wondered if Anop had some connection with his brother that allowed him to know what he was doing during their many months of isolation.
That's what you did, is it? Asked Annonoe.
Of course, said Anop. I sang every song I knew. You should have taught me more of them, Mother.
I'm glad you're not still singing them now, she said.
Oh, I am, said Anop. I hear them all the time. I just don't listen to them. Eliuic does, though. He's still trying to understand the words.
But they're all in plain language, said Annonoe.
Not the words of the songs, said Anop impatiently. The words beneath the songs.
What words are those? Asked Wad.
I didn't understand them either, not at first, but I was little. There were many words I didn't understand when I was little.
The words beneath the songs. Wad thought he might have some idea what words those were and who spoke them. The gates that held the prisoner that surrounded them. They were connected to Wad, to his heart hoard, to the place where the 1,000 gates of other mages were imprisoned. They had shouted all the time. Wad hardly heard them. But it was possible that these voices carried with the gates, that an isolated child with nothing else to occupy him might have heard something. Especially if there were gates in his own heart hoard, gates that he was yet too young to use. But the captive gates cried out to the captive boy, and if he was a gate mage himself, he would have heard them in the same way that Wad, at the height of his powers a millennium ago, could sense the location and the owner of every gate in 2 worlds. Wad took the boy by his hand.
Would you like to come with me and your mother now?
And my brother, said Anop.
Him too, said Wad.
Of course, said Anop. It's good to be out of the cave. Eliuic is even happier than I am. He's eager to go with you.
Again, Wad looked from the younger boy to the silent elder one. If Eliuic objected to his little brother speaking for him, he gave no sign. Anop took his older brother's hand, and Annonoe held him on the other side. Wad passed a gate mouth over them, and they were standing in the stone circle where the wild gate now shone plainly, obvious for anyone to see and use. It was good that the place was scarcely inhabited, that people shunned it. Stone circles were shrines no longer. Since the great gates were taken, they were regarded as dark places of ill fortune. They were avoided. All to the good. But that could not last forever. Someone would figure it out.
Don't let go of hands, said Wad.
And then, after a breath, he stepped through. The great gate swallowed up the 4 of them, and they were standing in a barn, with cows around. A woman was attaching a machine to the udders of a cow.
Is someone expecting you?
She asked politely, in a heavily accented version of the ancient language of West Illiwe. Wad understood her because he had already spoken to Danny North and said... There was no hope that her words would mean a thing to Annonoe.
I wasn't expecting you,
Anop answered her, imitating her accent. Another sign the boy might grow into a gate mage, to have a knack for languages.
I've come to speak with Danny North, said Wad.
He isn't here,
said the woman, turning her back.
angry at this stranger for such treatment, Wad gated to the other side of her. But before he could speak to her, a cow kicked him hard in the leg. He cried out and fell, then passed a gate over himself.
"The only way to punish a gate mage," said the woman, "is to take him by surprise."
"Punish me for what?"
"I know who you are, gate thief," said the woman. "I told him never to bring you to Middleguard, yet here you are. Do you think, because you have these darling children with you, I won't hurt you? Especially the damaged one. Why did you bring him here except to play on my sympathy?"
"I didn't know you were here," said Wad. "I don't know who you are."
"She's my wife," said a man's voice.
And in that moment, Wad was falling into a crevice in the earth. Not a wide one, but it was enough to swallow him. Wad gated to the loft of the barn.
"I'll never die by falling," said Wad. "Didn't my wife inform you that our stepson is away?"
"He'll be here," said Wad.
"How can you be sure of that?" asked the woman.
"Because he's been sensitized by passage through a great gate. He knows when someone passes through any gate in the world." That was when Danny North strode through the open door into the barn.
Chapter 13. Trust. Danny was getting dressed for another morning practice when he felt it. Something had happened at the Wild Gate. He stopped pulling on his running shorts, froze in position. The feeling didn't come again. He tried to think what he had actually experienced. It came from that portion of his outself that was entwined in the great gate in the Silverman's barn. It felt like when Vivi or Hermia passed through his gates, only far stronger. Why? Because it was a great gate? Because it was more than one person going through a gate at once. He had felt it before when his friends went through his first great gate, but had not been able to think about it then because he was immediately engaged with the gate thief. Now he even knew the direction they had passed. It was a group of four people, and they came from Westall to Earth. Whoever it was had arrived in Silverman's barn. It was milking time. Leslie would be there. Danny even knew who it was. Because lingering after the sensation of the great gate being used, there was another feeling. A quickening in the gates that Danny held captive inside him. The strange gates were saying, not in words, but deeper than words, "He is coming, he is coming." And the gates that belonged to Loki himself were brightening because their true owner was now in the same world with them. "Let us go home," they were saying, straining ever so slightly against the restraint of Danny's heart hoard. The gate thief had brought three people with him through the Wild Gate. Danny pulled off the shorts and put on pants and a shirt, socks and shoes and a jacket. He would not be running this morning after all. Once he was dressed, he stepped through the gate in his house that led to the Silverman's upstairs hall, then walked from house to barn through the biting cold of this autumn morning. The trees were dazzling with color. There was a trace of frost on the grass. Inside the barn, Leslie and Marion were standing side by side, looking up at the loft where Loki stood with a woman and two young boys.
"Took you long enough," said Marion.
"I was mostly naked," said Danny. "I stopped to dress."
"Thank you for that," said Leslie.
"Danny North," said Loki. "I don't want you here," said Danny and Westillian.
"I need your help," said Loki.
"But it will be hard to converse with your friend prepared to make the ground swallow us up."
"Only swallow," said Marion in his heavily accented version of Westillian. "Not chew."
"His mercy is noted," said Loki. "That's why I didn't gate him to the bottom of a convenient river, or into a tree."
"You didn't harm him," said Danny, "because you are afraid of me."
"I didn't harm him," said Loki, "because I am an intruder, and he is protecting his home and his friend."
"And you didn't leave because you wanted to be here when I arrived."
"I promise not to do anything to anyone here," said Loki. "I will not try to take back my own gates or swallow any others. In return, I hope you will not try to take the few that remain to me. Danny turned to Marion and Leslie. May I invite them into the house? Guest law will apply then, said Marion. I know, said Danny. It will bind you as well as us, Leslie reminded him. It will bind us all, said Danny. Aren't you curious to know about the woman and the children? Anonoe, one-time mistress of King Preyard of Iceway, said Loki, and the unofficial but potentially useful sons of the king, Eluic and Enop. Danny nodded to them formally. It was a ritual greeting that all the children learned very young, to be used on important and solemn occasions. Only, as a child, Danny's bow had been deep and from the waist. The nod he gave now was that of a ruler towards subordinates, the nod that Baba bestowed on those saluting him as Odin. No one could mistake what he was asserting, and indeed they did not. The return bow of the woman and her sons was deep, though not so deep as to imply worthlessness. And Loki also bowed slightly from the waist rather than merely nodding in return. The hierarchy had been asserted and agreed to. May we enter your home? Danny asked the Silvermans again. Leslie sighed. Gate me to the kitchen, please, Danny. He did. I'd like to walk with our guests, said Marion. Loki understood, and instead of gating down from the loft, he descended the ladder, Anonoe and the boys after him. Then Marion drew Loki with him and walked beside the ancient yet youthful gate mage toward the house. Danny knew that Marion would make dire warnings about what would happen if Loki broke his word. Danny also knew that Loki would agree cheerfully, knowing that in a pinch he could always gate away. So Marion's threats were more symbolic than practicable. Meanwhile, Danny looked at the woman and smiled. You're a mother. I had one once.
I hope a mother that you loved.
Devotedly, said Danny. Why don't you and your older son walk ahead and let me talk to the young one? Enop, is it? Anonoe took Eluic by the hand and walked him from the barn, whose smaller door was still standing open after Marion's and Loki's departure.
These are cows, aren't they? Said the boy, Enop.
They are, said Danny.
They're huge, said Enop.
Cows may be bigger here than in the place you came from, said Danny, but these are particularly well-fed and healthy cows. Leslie takes good care of them, though at this moment I believe they still want milking. Would you like to help me? The boy nodded.
I'm only little, he said, and I'm not very strong. I've been in prison, you know.
I'm sorry to hear that, said Danny. Did you do something very bad?
No, but I'm dangerous, because there are people who think my brother or I should be king after my father, and not the child of Queen Bexoy. She's from Grey, and her brother is our enemy.
I'm glad you're out of prison, since you didn't do anything wrong. Enop shrugged.
I'm glad to be out, too, but it's dangerous for me even to exist. I don't have to actually do anything.
I know the feeling, said Danny. I was older than you, though, when people made the same judgment about me.
Did they put you in jail?
I'm a gate mage, said Danny. They couldn't if they tried. All they can do is kill me or leave me alone.
Or kill someone you love, said Enop.
Ah, said Danny. I see you understand how power works.
I'm son of a king, said Enop. I think I'm going to be a gate mage, too.
Meanwhile, Danny had attached the milker to a cow.
Do you see how I did that? Does it hurt the cow?
It's designed to fit her teat exactly right, said Danny.
She likes it. What does it do?
Danny spent the next 15 minutes explaining the milking machines and letting Enop help in whatever way he was large enough and strong enough. What do you think of Loki? Asked Danny.
Who?
Asked Enop.
The gate mage who brought you.
Wad, said Enop. The word made no sense to Danny in this context. You want bread?
His name, said Enop. That's what mother calls him.
Wad, said Danny. Not a noble name.
He used to be the castle spy. He would climb everywhere, watch everything. Hull named him, the chief baker. She's dead, Somebody murdered her because she refused to murder the queen. It would have been better if she had done it. The queen is an evil bitch. Danny was amused at the way Enop echoed what he must have heard. What about Wad? Is he evil or good? He kept us in prison, said Enop. But when Queen Bexoy said to kill us, he didn't. After a while, he gave us better food, and he got us out just when soldiers were trying to kill us in our caves.
That sounds frightening.
It was, said Enop. They were my father's soldiers.
Did they know who you were?
Enop thought a moment. I don't know, he said. But they knew I was little.
You have a point, said Danny.
Enop, why did your mother and Wad bring you here?
Enop shrugged.
It isn't safe for us in Iceway. I think they want us to be safe here.
This world isn't safer. People die on both worlds just as easily.
When I'm a gate mage, I'll hide where they can't find me.
Are you sure that's what you'll be?
I'm already good with languages, said Enop. That's a sign.
It is, said Danny. Are you also a devilish little brat? Enop gave that more thought than Danny had expected.
I don't know. I have only been free of my prison for a few weeks.
We'd better watch carefully, then, said Danny, so we don't get taken by surprise when the pranks start. They kept milking till the job was done. Only then did Danny take Enop by the hand and walk with him across the yard to the house. In the kitchen, Leslie had the table spread with small plates and a big platter of warmed-up sliced bread and an array of butter, jams, and honey. Everyone was eating. Enop ran right to the table beside his brother and started jabbering to him. Danny saw that Eliuik did not answer him, or even show a sign of listening. But Enop was undiscouraged by this, and it wasn't as if Eliuik were inert, for he was eating steadily, though without any visible pleasure in the food, which Danny knew from experience was extraordinarily good.
"Did my son bore you?" asked Anonoe. "He chatters as if he thought himself a great philosopher or statesman, with the world eager to hear his words."
"I could not have been more eager," said Danny, adopting the arch formal tones he had only overheard when spying on the adults meeting in the library of the old house in the North family compound. "Your son is surprisingly happy for one so recently a prisoner."
"He is resilient," said Anonoe.
Danny could not help glancing at Eliuik, but then looked at Loki, as if he had only chanced to look at Eliuik as his gaze passed from Anonoe to the gate thief. "You have achieved your first purpose," Danny said to Loki. "You have passed through a great gate."
"My first purpose was to see that no such gate existed," said Loki.
"But having failed in that, it is true that I thought it wise to refresh such small powers as are left to me."
"You know more than I about how these powers work," said Danny. "But it seems to me that while our brute force depends on the number of our gates, our dexterity depends on knowledge and experience. I have the brute force, it's true, but you have the deftness of long practice."
"Long practice followed by far longer disuse," said Loki. "I have spent 14 centuries and more drifting upward through a tree, aware of little but occasional flashes of gate-making, which I quickly extinguished."
"Yet you did come out of the tree," said Danny,
"and apparently some time before I attempted a great gate."
"But not before you made your first few dozen gates," said Loki. "Your first few hundred, I should say."
It was the gate thief's admission that he had been aware of Danny for some time, that he had sensed, however dimly, that Danny was alive, a great mage in potential, if not in accomplishment.
"I didn't even know I was making the gates," Danny admitted.
"Be careful what you say," said Marion.
"He knows," said Danny. "He has been watching me even before he knew that it was I whom he watched."
"Aren't we the lofty speakers now?" said Leslie. "I feel as if I'm in a school studying Westilian style."
"These gate mages and their linguistic show-offery," said Marion in English.
"I am learning your English a little," said Loki, and while his words were slow and stilted, his Ohio accent was nearly perfect.
"How?" demanded Leslie in English. "Who in Westil could possibly teach you? Do you have spies here?" He does, said Danny, also in English. Leslie stood up and paced to the kitchen counter, then turned around, as if somehow the sink had been besieged and she were its sole defender. Me, said Danny. His spies are inside me. The gates I took from him. Thousands of them. And through them he can glimpse a little. He can hear. How much? Demanded Marion. What does he know? I don't know, said Danny. All his gates ever do that I know of is demand that any working gate be eaten up. If he had succeeded in swallowing my gates, then I could tell you just how much a mage can learn through his captive gates. But I'd rather have my ignorance than his knowledge. If I could hear more, I'd speak better, said Loki, reverting to Westillian. In truth, I see nothing. I hear nothing. I am inside the womb of his mind. But there is where his language dwells and his memory. I cannot search at will, but I can overhear his thoughts when he makes them into language. I can see his memories when he concentrates on them. I am not spying. Where he has imprisoned my outself, I have no choice but to see and hear what he shows me. But Danny didn't believe Loki. The trouble was he didn't know in which direction the lie was leaning. Did Loki see and hear far more than he admitted? Or had he seen and heard nothing at all until he passed through the wild gate, enhancing his powers and coming so much nearer to Danny himself? What did you come here for? Asked Danny. You came with these three, so your purpose was more than your own enhancement. Their lives are in danger, said Loki. Here they will be safe. That's absurdly false, said Marion. All the mages of the world would be assaulting us if they knew this wild gate existed in our barn. There's no more dangerous place on earth. But who would tell them, said Loki. Then he raised a hand. That was not a threat. Marion did not relax, his posture even more alert. How else can we hear that statement? An observation, said Loki. This wild gate has existed for days now. And yet they leave you alone. If your secret were out, they would not wait. They're afraid of our power of defense, said Leslie. Marion and I have passed through a gate. No beast mage can hold onto his heart bound if they come against us. The ground surrounding us is under Marion's control. Danny could gate them away, even if they got past our defense. So you think they do know and bide their time? Asked Loki. What do you want? Demanded Marion. I don't believe you brought this woman here for her protection. I feel a great power in her. I felt it first, said Leslie. She's a mage in her own right, and passing through the great gate made her dangerous. It did, said Annonoe. But the very fact that you mistrust me shows that I have used none of my power on you. It took only a moment for the implications of her remark to sink in. Marion rose to his feet and joined Leslie by the sink. Danny, she's a man-mage, Marion said in English. I got it, said Danny. But as she said, she hasn't used it. Or she's so powerful that we can't feel that she used it on us. So you think she's making you so suspicious of her? Asked Danny. If she tried to use it, I would gate her away myself, said Loki. I gain nothing if she irritates you, and neither does she. We face a deadly enemy on Westil, a fire master at least, if not a light rider.
Queen Bexoy, added Aenop helpfully, our father's true wife.
Danny looked from Loki to Annonoe and saw that Bexoy was indeed Annonoe's objective here. The grim determination in her face, the hand that rested on Aenop's nape, the little toss of her head. All these testified to Aenop's having said the truth. But Loki was another matter. His approval had come a fraction of a second late and looked too much like an imitation of Annonoe's. He had a very different goal. You want Annonoe empowered, said Danny. You want her battling this Bexoy. But that's not why you've come.
Said, Leslie suggested, that wind mage who stayed on Westil.
I've befriended him,
and stopped his storming all over Westwold," said Loki. "I have him studying with a tree mage to learn how to still his inself so he can control his powers and use them with finesse." Still only partial